certainly do feel a shared experience.
A live performance is totally, totally different.
A front row seat at a live concert every weekday night. Radio 3, live in concert.
To hear people coughing in the auditorium, to hear people applauding, enjoying the same piece together.
I do enjoy it through the radio.
Live concerts from across the UK. With, on Thursday, Mozart and Mahler from the Liverpool Philharmonic Hall. Radio 3, live in concert. Weeknights from 7:30 on BBC Radio 3.
And BBC Radio 3 is on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. Just gone 1 o'clock now, and time for the news from Lopa Kotari.
Tens of thousands of people are taking part in the sixth day of protests in a square in the Spanish capital, Madrid. They're demonstrating against government austerity measures and Spain's unemployment rate, which is the highest in Europe. Local and regional elections begin tomorrow, and political activity is banned on the eve of a vote, but the police have not intervened. A suicide bomber has killed at least six medical students at a military hospital canteen in the Afghan capital, Kabul. A spokesman for the Taliban said it carried out the attack because it was targeting Afghan doctors and those who train them. Human rights campaigners in Syria now say that more than 40 people were shot dead by the security forces in the latest crackdown on pro-democracy protests yesterday. 26 were killed in the region of Idlib in the north. The authorities say security forces there confronted armed gangs who set fire to government buildings. Police in Malaysia say about 30 children were buried when a mudslide struck an orphanage in the central state of Selangor. Two children have died and rescuers have pulled out six others who were critically injured. The International Monetary Fund has said it's begun looking for a new head to replace Dominique Strauss-Kahn, who's resigned to focus on fighting charges of sexual assault in New York. The IMF said the selection process would be transparent and merit-based. Mrs. Strauss-Kahn has been released on bail. Pope Benedict has spoken to astronauts on board the shuttle Endeavour in the first papal call to space. He praised the crew's courage and said they were embarking on a spiritual as well as a scientific adventure. An art gallery named after the sculptor Dame Barbara Hepworth has opened in her home city of Wakefield. The project, which cost £35 million, will be one of the country's largest purpose-built galleries. Among the highlights on show are more than 40 works donated by Dame Barbara's family. And the weather, wet and windy weather across Scotland and Northern Ireland will spread to Wales and northwest England during the afternoon. Southern and eastern England will stay dry and rather warm. That's the latest BBC News. The time is coming up to 1:03.
And now here's Lucy Skeeping with today's early music show.
If you ever find yourself in Paris, have a wander down to the famous opera house, the 19th century Palais Garnier. Cast your eyes upwards and you'll see a series of bronze busts proudly displayed around the theatre's façade, portraits of some of the composers who were particularly revered in France when this most ornate of opera houses was built. Mozart, Beethoven, Rossini are there, alongside Meyerbeer and Alavi. And from the earlier period, there's also Gluck and his contemporary Niccolò Jommelli. Who? You might well ask, because Jommelli's works are rarities these days. But in many ways, his operas are the equal of Gluck's. Certainly, they were just as forward-looking. In fact, in his time, Jommelli was a highly respected figure whose dramatic ideas and fusion of the latest musical styles made him one of the 18th century's greatest opera reformers. And he's the subject of today's show.
Thank you.
L'arte e l'ingegno from Jomelli's last opera, Armida Abbandonata of 1770. Patricia Petitbon with Les Talons Lyriques, directed by Christophe Rousset. And we'll hear more from that work later on, but first, a bit more about Jomelli. He was born in 1714 in Aversa, a town just a little north of Naples. Naples at that time was a great capital city, one of the most important musical centres of Europe. And it was here that Jomelli came to study. Still barely a teenager, he came under the influence of just about all the major composers of the day, not just Neapolitans or even Italians for that matter, but figures such as the great German-born composer Johann Adolf Hasse, a brilliant networker who knew absolutely everyone in the opera world. Jomelli was soon composing for the Neapolitan stage himself, comic operas as well as the more noble or serious style known as opera seria. But of course, like today, any bright young artist needed sponsorship, and they had a whole host of powerful title types who, for their own prestige as much as philanthropy, were happy to give a helping hand. In Jomelli's case, such a man was Cardinal Henry Benedict, otherwise known as the Duke of York, and sometimes even Henry the Ninth of England. There's no time here to tell his intriguing story right now. Anyway, this space is strictly reserved for Jomelli today. But just to fill you in, Henry Benedict was the brother of Bonnie Prince Charlie, and he was born in Rome, a Catholic exile at a time when, of course, England was definitely no place for a Jacobite. With Benedict's financial support, Jomelli was able to accept commissions throughout Italy. Clearly a composer already at the top of his game, he was confident enough to draw together the best of German form, the elegance of the French, and sheer Italian brio. And now, at the age of 30, he was offered his first permanent post, director of music at Venice's famous Ospedale degli Incurabili.
Oh!
To seek one's beloved amidst perils, to find him bound in chains is anguish that lacerates the heart. An aria from Armida Abbandonata, performed by Véronique Jean. As well as opera, Jommelli produced a great deal of sacred music, not least for the young students at the Ospedale in Venice. There was a mass, several solo motets and psalm settings, and the ambitious Laudate Pueri for two women's choruses, soloists, and two string orchestras. One of his oratorios, The Passion of Jesus Christ, he dedicated to his old friend and patron Cardinal Benedict, the so-called Duke of York that I mentioned earlier. It was a good move because it gave him an entree into Rome's exclusive papal circle, and an introduction to another culture-loving cardinal who put in a good word for him when the job of director of music at St. Peter's fell vacant. Of course, having written so much for the stage, Jommelli was equally successful in the way that he could harness the human voice to express prayer. Listen to this moving section from his Te Deum, composed just a few years after the Rome appointment. We therefore pray thee, help thy servants, whom thou hast redeemed with thy precious blood. Marta Beniatchkova singing part of Jommelli's Te Deum in D with the Virtuosi of Prague, directed by Hilary Griffiths. It's very operatic in a way. Jommelli's compositions always had a touch of drama to them, which was what struck visitors such as the eminent French writer and legal eagle Charles de Brosse. One must confess, he wrote quite early on in Jommelli's career, that for strength of declamation, harmonic variety and sublime accompaniment, one cannot see or imagine anything more dramatic. But even Jommelli's work at St. Peter's couldn't keep him away from the opera house for long. The mid-18th century was an extremely pivotal period in operatic history, and Jommelli and his evolving musical style was at the heart of it. From quite early on in the century, composers had written opera seria, works based on moralistic tales that usually revolved around some elevated figure from Greek myth or ancient Rome. Their succession of stylized da capo arias provided opportunities for fabulous virtuoso vocalese, often by a castrato cast in one of the lead roles. Many of Jommelli's works fall firmly into this category, but now the tradition was being questioned both by theorists and by the composers themselves. Opera seria was just a bit, well, static. There were other disputes as well. Which was better, the high-minded French opera or the more expressive Italian sort that, say, Pergolesi was writing? And a little later, another sparring match blew up concerning the reforms of Gluck and his rival Piccini. These musical wars were fought with passion in the intellectual presses of the time until eventually the new reformed classical style of opera came to be widely accepted. You can get some idea of the ways opera seria was progressing, from the overture to Jommelli's opera Di Donne Abbandonata, which is packed full of changing moods and orchestral colours. the overture to Jamelle's Di Donne Abbandonata, performed by the Stuttgart Chamber Orchestra, directed by Frieda Bernius. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping, and today we're looking at the life and career of Niccolò Jommelli. Being exceptionally well-travelled, Jommelli was able to absorb all sorts of ideas and influences from many of the great capitals of Europe. In Vienna, he met the leading librettist Metastasio and set many of his texts to music. And in Mannheim, he experienced firsthand the famous modern effects developed by the court orchestra, the sudden crescendos, the so-called Mannheim rocket, where the orchestra accelerated up a rising broken chord, and the sudden moments of loud and soft. This Mannheim sound was incredibly innovative, even shocking at times, and the man behind it all was Johann Stamitz. First movement of the Sinfonia in G by one of the founders of the Mannheim orchestral style, Johann Stamitz, played there by Concerto Köln. Jommelli grabbed many of these new ideas in both hands and he incorporated them into his operas. It was drama, not just virtuosic singing, that he was aiming for, and in this he deserves some of the credit as a reformer that opera historians mostly pour onto the ample shoulders of Gluck. You can get a sense of this change, this transition from the old to the reformed style, in his opera Vologeso. King Vologeso has been defeated in battle, but is saved by his beloved consort Berenice. A great deal of high-flown passion and mayhem follow, during which time the Roman leader tries to capture the heart of Berenice for himself. But don't worry too much about all the detail. Just listen to how Jommelli portrays the distraught Berenice. By now, old-fashioned recitative has been replaced by a more declamatory style, and as she becomes more and more agitated, richly imaginative orchestral effects underline the sense of drama. Thank you. Berenice's so-called mad scene from the last act of Jomelli's Vologeso. Gabriele Rosmanit with the Stuttgart Chamber Orchestra under Frieda Benius. Actually, it is particularly appropriate to hear this music played by a Stuttgart band because it was there that Vologeso was first staged. The young Duke of Württemberg had just built a new opera house modelled on Versailles. It was super modern with the latest stage machinery, and he invited Jomelli to come to Stuttgart and become its musical supremo. The reigning duke still had the final word on the themes of his operas, of course, but he gave Jomelli control over pretty much all other aspects of the productions. And better still, his purse appeared to be bottomless. Jomelli was able to call upon virtually any talent he wanted, and he built up one of the finest musical ensembles in Europe. Everyone who was anyone visited the Württemberg Court Opera. Even the 7-year-old Mozart stopped off there with his father on his way to London. Among Jomelli's most celebrated compositions, in his own lifetime at least, was his Dido and Aeneas opera, Di Donne Abbandonata. Here's a wonderfully assertive aria from the last act, in which Aeneas announces, "I am no longer a lover. I am a warrior. A noble desire for honour calls me to triumph." ¶¶ Aeneas abandons his lover Dido in the final act of Jomelli's Di Donne Abbandonata. Martina Borst as Aeneas with the Stuttgart Chamber Orchestra under Frieda Bernius. There's no doubt that Jomelli, and indeed music in general, hugely benefited from the patronage of the Wittenberg court. But the Duke's iron ways could verge on outright cruelty. And by the 1760s, the political situation in Stuttgart had become so fraught that Jomelli, now in his mid-50s, decided to move on. There were many offers, but he chose to return to Naples, the city where his talent had first flowered decades before. Sadly, his last years were far from easy. His wife died, he found himself in great pain from the gout and without a regular income. Even so, when he died at the age of 60 in 1774, he was widely mourned as one of the greatest opera composers of his time. But thereafter, his music fell into decline until its comparatively recent rediscovery. To end, let's return to one of Jomelli's modern champions, Christophe Rousset with Les Talents Lyriques, and the opera we heard at the beginning of the programme, Armida Abbandonata. Like Lully's Armide and Handel's Rinaldo, it's based on Tasso's epic poem about the Saracen sorceress Armida and the Crusader knight Rinaldo. But I think you can hear how in Jomelli's hands it provides a kind of link between these composers of the Baroque and the classical masterpieces of Mozart.
Final scene from Act 2 of the opera Armida Abbandonata by Niccolò Jommelli, who was the subject of today's early music show. Eva Malas-Golevska was Armida with Les Talents Lyriques, directed by Christophe Rousset, and the early music show was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced by Chris Wines. Well, in tomorrow's programme, reflecting the theme of this year's Lufthansa Festival of Baroque Music, Catherine Bott will be examining the history and music of the Hanseatic League. The early music show tomorrow, just after 1 o'clock.
On BBC Four.
They're well-known, almost sort of household shoes, but nobody has any idea where they've come from.
His Royal Highness, the Prince of Wales, brings his personal insight to the life and music of the composer Sir Hubert Parry.
Sir Hubert Parry is one of the great underrated, underappreciated special British composers.
A journey to discover more about the man behind the music.
It's amazing how many fine pieces by Parry are still hidden away, waiting to be rediscovered.
The Prince and the Composer, this Friday evening at 7:30 on BBC Four.
Well, this is BBC Radio 3. We have now another chance to hear a concert which was first broadcast live last Monday lunchtime, and it's presented by Catherine Bott.
Welcome to Wigmore Hall, where we're about to enjoy a lunchtime feast of English and French song, cooked up for us by the tenor John Mark Ainslie and pianist Roger Vignoles. Their recital celebrates two great 20th century songwriters, Francis Poulenc and Benjamin Britten, and pays tribute to Henry Purcell in Britten's stylish and affectionate arrangements of two of his best-known songs. The first group of songs has a distinctly Baroque tinge. Three out of four lyrics are from 17th century England. The exception comes first, with words by Britten's friend W.H. Auden, and even that song has been described as quasi-Handelian. Let the Florid Music Praise is the opener to the cycle On This Island, settings of Auden's poetry written in 1937, the year Britten moved to the old mill at Snape. It's followed by Purcell's incantatory Music for a While, arranged by Britten, and then Britten's own music again, the first of his five canticles, My Beloved is Mine and I Am His. Peter Pears called the canticle Britten's finest piece of vocal music to date. It's an intensely lyrical setting of words by Francis Quarles, a royalist courtier poet, who died 5 years before the execution of his monarch Charles I. And finally, we return to Purcell with one of his most joyous love songs, Sweeter Than Roses. It's from a play called Pausanias the Betrayer. The play's forgotten, but the song lives on, and Benjamin Britten's arrangement brings out all its innate theatricality. John Mark Ainslie began his career in Baroque music, and he's greatly admired for his affinity with both Purcell and Britten. Now he and Roger Vignoles begin their recital with a Baroque flourish in Britten's Let the Florid Music Praise.